From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of December. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check in right away on the marketplace. We have a busy program for you today. Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Wayne, as we went into the settlement prices, I don't have those numbers, but can you give me a quick update of how things finished in Chicago?
Yeah, March corn settled at $3.90. That was up 2 cents. New December at 4.02, that was up 1¾ cents. The January beans at 9.28¾, that was up 6¾. The March at 9.40¾, that was up 4¾. And the Nov beans, 9.66½, and that was up about 3½. As we look here, the March wheat closed at 5.56¼. That was up 6¼. So we had a nice little bump right into the close.
Yeah, so it was a little follow-through from yesterday, but not much. What did you make of it?
Well, you know, it was supposed to be a turnaround Tuesday, and thank God it didn't turn around on us. At least it stayed up a little bit. A lot of skepticism about the Chinese deal. China not quite sane and sounding as enthusiastic as our people or the announcements out of the White House that way along the way. And lots of discussion of how it might work. Can they actually get to the $40 to $50 billion worth? And talking about maybe sending, because we don't count what is shipped to Hong Kong as part of what goes into mainland China, as maybe diverting those shipments to mainland and then shipping it back to Hong Kong to get up to those numbers. But all in all, the funds are still short. The news is still good. And we had our seasonals say that if the bears have turkey at Thanksgiving, we get to eat it at Christmas. So, you know, a little bit of optimism going on into that. And the stock market sure didn't hurt anything.
Yeah, so if you talk about just the Hong Kong, I think that's about $10 billion in products. So, and I don't know whether that was all ag product. I can't remember what I read during the day, but I believe that was correct. Even if you take that out, or maybe if you have this, as Todd Hubbs has been telling us at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, we're still going to pick up something like $8, $9, $10 billion worth of extra goods each year, agricultural products, and that probably would be enough to make things really begin to hum along for some of the sectors. The trade not coming to that realization yet, it seems.
Well, they're skeptical. We thought we were right down to the final stretch here and just about to cross the finish line, and things have stalled out, and we still haven't got all the language totally in there, and so everybody's just a little leery until we get this signed. The other thing here that's really helped us today was the soy oil, the 2-year highs on the hopes that it's included in the bill, now it hasn't quite passed yet, or that should be voted on later on today, was reinstating the dollar a gallon blending credit. And palm oil has been helping drive the beans up in this last move here, with palm oil hitting multi-year highs and going in there too. So, and then, of course, Argentina, the tax went, they're saying a 15% tax on corn and wheat, and maybe up to 33% tax on beans. So those things are helping the bean market.
Any best practices for farmers as we go into the end of the year that you try to tell all of your clientele about?
Well, I think, you know, that basically, first off, number one, if you haven't cored your bins, core your bins. This is a year that it's going to be this corn was wet when it went in, and it dried in a lot of fines. So core your bins along that way. I think we want to be alert here, too, because we're seeing some very good basis levels popping in. We had 925 cash beans into Lafayette here today, then a cash bid. You know, if you need some cash flow, need to core those bean bins, that's a good one. You know, we looked here in Forma, is looking at the acres or the production, and they're going to be 93 million less than what the government said last time on corn, and 10 million less on beans for what their guesstimate is for this January report.
Anything else before I let you go for the afternoon?
I think that's about it for right now, Todd.
Hey, thank you so much. And I know that there is trade next week on Tuesday. However, it's December the 24th, and I'm going to take the day off. You will as well. So I'll talk to you again, not until the new year.
Well, then I do have something, Dad. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners.
Hey, thanks so much, and I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you, Wayne.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm on the road this week with the Ag Economist with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You can catch up with us. The details are online. Walk-ins are certainly welcome. Registration desk open at 7:45 tomorrow. We'll be at the Paradise Hotel in East Peoria, Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thanks for being with us, Don. Christmas is coming. What will the weather look like?
The weather leading up to Christmas week across many areas of the Midwest, Corn Belt, and even the Northern Plains will enjoy a little bit of a December thaw. Temperatures are going to be mild and conditions are going to be a bit warmer for the rest of this week, through the weekend, and leading up just before Christmas. Now, we're still going to have some areas of rain and thunderstorm activity over the southeast United States. That'll be the wettest area, the Gulf Coast. The southeast United States will be the most stormy, while we get a little bit of a mild break from the Rockies through the upper plain states, the Midwest, and Corn Belt. Now, after Christmas, heading into the new year, we will be looking at a trend towards colder, stormy weather again. We'll start to see some Pacific storms bring first rain to California just before Christmas, and then the week through Christmas into New Year's, wet along the West Coast with a couple of storm systems moving across the High Plains and Rockies that will eventually bring some wet weather to the Midwest and Corn Belt between Christmas and New Year's. And then after New Year's, trends across a lot of the nation, especially the central and northeast Great Lakes, look like 2020 could be off to a cold start. On the other side of the globe, it's been very hot in Australia, record-breaking heat there over the last week. While it won't be as hot, they're still going to be warmer and drier than normal over most of Australia in the coming week. We have a hodgepodge in South America, some wet and dry areas in both Brazil and Argentina, and we will see a smattering of precipitation in the southern hemisphere, Brazil, Argentina here over the next week to 10 days.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now, late last week, I talked with Emerson Nafziger, extension agronomist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We heard a portion of that interview already, but I wanted to take something up with him related to soybeans and some other crops and maybe some of the change in climate and how things worked through this growing season. In particular, I was interested to know about soybeans and how they ended up senescing at the end of the season. Relatively quickly, I thought probably that they were light sensitive and that did the trick. Emerson had more details.
Well, it's light sensitive, but the flowering process is light sensitive. The maturity process is not as light sensitive, and we actually don't really understand it particularly well. But if you go back and look at the time course, say for flowering of the crop, in 2019, and then the time course for it to start losing its leaf color, which means it's pretty much done. The distance between those two was actually not shorter than it often is. So flowering was much later, maturity was considerably later, but between those two is where the yield gets made. And I think that what we're going to see is that the actual period in which the crop made its yield was not a lot shorter than it normally is.
Does that mean that the vegetative state from time of planting to flowering was actually really short?
Fairly short. Soybeans, the fact that they're sensitive to day length, they're actually sensitive to night length, it has to reach a certain minimum before they'll flower. And when you plant soybeans the middle of June, they're likely to start flowering by the middle of July. They already have had a long enough night to flower, and they only need to be, you know, about hand high in order for them to start the flowering process. So temperature is important in all of this, and our temperatures were actually pretty moderate. In other words, they were pretty close to average in July and August. That gave us another big boost because we saw a crop that then formed a good canopy and was able to have decent pod numbers and to fill those pod numbers, not like we saw in 2018 with, you know, a lot of 80s and 90 bushel yields around, but there probably were some places this year, and it's just that, you know, the season was pushed very late, but generally for soybeans came to an end, that allowed them to get done and mostly get harvested. Corn was a little bit different, and it was planted, you know, very late. It doesn't really respond to day length, but it responds to temperatures. So it was developing under rapid temperature growing degree day accumulations, and it flowered, of course, pollinated considerably later than it normally does, but we still had enough season left, in most of the state at least, to get that crop mature before weather started to cool down in October and growing degree day accumulations slowed to a crawl. Compared to the northern Great Plains, where they still have over half of their crop in the field, their corn crop in the field, you know, we've made a lot better progress here. But it's still challenging. The crop, in most cases, when it did mature, you know, it was during fairly cool temperatures, and so it didn't dry down very fast, and that's been an ongoing issue. But yield-wise, it had enough season to make pretty good yields. Canopy stayed intact long enough to get us to pretty good yield levels, even where the crop was planted fairly late.
Thinking back over several years, as the climate has differed in Illinois, and the high daytime highs are not as high as they once were on average, nighttime lows are higher than they have been, and that has evened out when you look at actual growing degree days, I think, and what the average temperature is. The average temperature is about the same. It's just that there's a narrower range. Does that make much of a difference, and has it over time?
Probably not very much. And they got, you know, everything got sort of complicated this year by the fact that, you know, the days were shortening earlier in the development of the plant's season than they normally do. So that shorter days and then the temperatures were important, but what really helped us this year was that they weren't very far away from average. If we get average temperatures during a growing season, that's generally really favorable for crop production. And this year we did, with the exception of September. And if we could design a season, we'd have May be warm like it was in 2018, and we'd have September be warm like it was in 2019. But 2018 was a season, the warm May really helped us get things started off well and a crop developing record early. And then only a year later, of course, it was developing record late. That was altogether because of the delays in planting.
One final question, and I don't know how much you will have thought about this, but the growing season in Illinois is now about 9 days longer than it has been in the past. I think the Northern Plains is actually about 35 days longer at this point. Does that change things very much?
Well, it does change things to have a season that's on average a little bit longer, but in a particular season, that may not mean very much. We haven't seen frost come early for quite a while here, the fall frost. We've had spring frost be later than normal a few times. We've had some May frosts over the last couple of decades, but all in all, the maturities of the varieties, hybrids that we grow are such that, you know, adding to the season, it doesn't mean we're lengthening the maturities of what we grow to take advantage of that. What it does is it gives us a little bit more cushion at the two ends of the season, and I think we see that in 2019 where we could plant that late and still get these crops to maturity. If we had been using, you know, longer maturing hybrids as a general rule to take advantage of it, we'd have had real problems in 2019 getting them finished, and that's what they had in the northern Great Plains. You know, they already grow fairly short season hybrids there, but they just didn't have enough time and temperature to get these things to maturity before it frosted.
Hey, thanks so much.
Sure.
Emerson Navsiger is an extension agronomist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On this Tuesday, Dave Chatterton now joins us. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing and talks with us once a month about the agricultural energies. But he is at a big event in Springfield today, and it's not the Illinois Farm Economics Summit, which took place this morning, but it is the Hemp Summit. And I'm wondering there at the fairgrounds how many people showed up.
Yeah, Todd. So attending today at the first annual Illinois Hemp Summit in Springfield, I guess attendance here, almost 700 folks coming in. We've got growers from that are traditional row crop growers. We've got bankers and lenders. We've got people from Oregon and California and Colorado. We've got the hippie crowd and the small grower all the way to the major growers and the guys trying to. So a lot of interest around the event and about what the future of hemp may be and what kind of an alternative crop or an alternative revenue source it may be for some of our growers here in Illinois.
They'll take up hemp production in a couple of ways, but I'm wondering if there were some takeaways you can discuss now.
Yeah, Todd, I think it's a wide open business at this point, or wide open business model. I think the lack of infrastructure regarding any kind of a baseline on the research for the genetics of growing either a fiber or an oil crop, all the way up to where that crop is marketed and everything in between, from the agronomy to the seed to the organic element to the inspections and the licensing and the potential for it to go hot, to crop insurance, to financing, all those things are really being figured out on the fly. And there is no, there's no template to go by at this particular point. It's an industry that's literally growing as we talk about it. And the state regulators are trying to keep up with that. The growers, the equipment manufacturers, the seed and hybrid people are all trying to scramble and figure out which direction it goes. And so it's a very interesting lay of the land, but certainly there's a lot of interest here.
Were you surprised by the number of people that were in the audience today?
I was surprised not only by the number of people, Todd, but also the diversity of the group that we're talking about. And it literally runs the gamut, as I mentioned earlier, from a number of different aspects and a number of different people outside of what I'll call our traditional row crop community that are kicking the tires on this and trying to figure out a way and where they can fit and where they can profitably fit into the marketplace and the idea that it will continue to grow.
Why did you go?
I've got some actual customers and growers from our area in central Illinois that have pushed into the hemp business that are talking about processing facilities and how this market may unfold, and I guess just want to be a part of that. So being invited by them, it piqued my interest here. We've also got a crop insurance element to this where we have a few of our AIP or crop insurance providers at Strategic who are looking at how and what they can do to insure hemp. There are going to be a few products available this year. There's not a traditional revenue product like we would find in corn, soybeans, or wheat, but we do have products around hail, around wind, around temperature and precipitation, and some other issues. So,
my understanding, and I don't know whether you will have heard about this yet or not, is that some of the growers from this past season have an awful lot of production just in storage without an actual place to go. Did they take up the supply chain very much today?
Well, we've talked about it, but it hasn't been a big topic of conversation yet. I think we'll get into that a little bit later this afternoon. But certainly some of our growers are sitting on product that they don't have a home for. The lack of a merchant or a commercial entity in this marketplace is one of the big problems for a grower, and especially from the lending perspective of where can I go with this product and what kind of a price will I be guaranteed. If you look at where acreage was at, let's say in the U.S., going back, not into the too distant past here, we didn't have a lot of growers. We had something like in 2018, we had 3,500 growers nationwide. Last year in 2019, we had almost 17,000. So we got our acreage up almost 500,000 acres probably planted of industrial hemp. Probably, 230 of that will be harvested. So we're overwhelming the market to some degree right now as it tries to organize itself. And I think those issues are some of the things that are square in front of people who are trying to enter the business or stay profitable.
Again, we're talking to Dave Chatterton. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing. And at the first annual Illinois Department of Agriculture Hemp Summit on the Illinois State Fairgrounds, that's where the Illinois Department of Agriculture is located in the state, in Springfield. He joins us once a month on Tuesday, usually to talk about the agricultural energies. I suppose we should take that up as well. There is some idea, and I don't know whether you've been able to trace this down just yet or not, that the agreement for phase one of the Chinese negotiations may actually include some ethanol. Are you hopeful that's the case?
Yeah, we're certainly getting those signals, Todd. And, you know, while we've, you know, the focus, I think, of the agreement, and especially in our space, has been on the row crops and on you know, soybeans and crops and grains. There's also an element to that that includes energy and manufactured goods and raising those by some $200 billion over the course of this agreement. So certainly there's a place for that to fit in. And we are hearing as of, you know, as recently as this morning, that China will be carving out some degree of potential for ethanol and potentially even for DDGs going forward with that agreement.
What are the fundamentals on the ground, though, like today for ethanol and in the ag or energy space in general?
Well, unfortunately, they're not very good for ethanol. The margins here have collapsed again in the last 3 weeks. We're back down to some of the lowest points of the marketing year so far. And that has to do with, as we've continued to produce and see our production go up, we had a good 2.5 months where we were increasing production almost every week, got to a marketing year high, and that's bumped the stocks levels up nationally. And what we're running into is that we don't have that good export market in China or in South America or the other places, and we're backing up the supply. In the meantime, U.S. gasoline demand has just gone flat, so if not a little bit lower year over year. And because of that blend wall, we're having trouble disposing of the available ethanol that we've got, and it's putting additional pressure on the processors here, the producers.
Anything else that we should be watching at this point, and I'm thinking about as we look forward into the next year, are there seasonals that producers need to take advantage of or not related to their energy needs?
Well, traditionally there are. Traditionally this time of year, right in the fourth quarter, we're trying to look for a price low. We haven't found that. In fact, we found the opposite this year, and that's a combination of the phase one deal becoming closer to reality, as well as the OPEC deal that was agreed to in early December, where they're going to cut additional production off the market. So we're looking at, let's say, diesel fuel and crude oil prices that are going to new highs here of late. We're up, you know, within reach of where we saw the spike high after the Saudi attack back in September, and even within our yearly highs. So we're trying to be a bit patient with that. We think as the market unfolds next year, we've still got plenty of supply. Our crude oil production domestically remains record high. One issue that we're going to have specific to diesel fuel is just the processing element of that and the refining element of that. And what we look at in general is that we have very high gasoline stocks in the U.S., but we have distillate stocks that continue to lag both year ago and average, you know, levels. And in doing so, the refiners are very reluctant to put additional crude through their refineries, because when they do so, they typically get twice the amount of gasoline that they do for distillates when they produce that. So by getting to distillate, which is the product that we need, they create an additional surplus of the gasoline, which we don't need. And so it's kind of a chicken-egg argument about how we solve that. So I think we're going to be, you know, we're looking for some lower diesel fuel prices after the first of the year, but I would not set my sights too low here as far as what we're looking at for spring needs and coverage.
Hey, thanks so much, Dave, for bringing us up to speed on both the agricultural energies and the annual hemp summit at the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County.